For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's September the 10th, and we are in Parshas Kedoshim, page 660. Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15. Lo sasu avel b'mishpat, do not do, and avel, and avel means
Warner?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry, no.
No, it means like an iniquity, something improper.
Perversion.
Perversion, okay, of justice. Lo sisafne dol, do not show favoritism to a poor person. Velo sedar pnei gadol, and do not give glory or honor to a big person. Betzedek tishpot amisecha, in righteousness you shall judge your friend. So here we have the basic rules for being a judge, which is you have to be impartial. And impartial means not to take into account any of the circumstances of those who you are judging. So you got to judge properly. You can't say the person is poor and therefore they need the money. So therefore I'll rule in their favor in order to get them some money. After all, the rich person can afford to lose the money. Anyway, the rich person is obligated in tzedakah. So, you know, here they're having a court case over whether the rich person owes the poor person $100 or not. The rich person in $100 is not going to make much of a difference, but for the poor person, it's going to make a huge difference. And the rich person anyway has to give tzedakah to the poor person. So I may as well rule in the poor person's favor. So that is us. You're not allowed to do that. You have to judge honestly. You can't take these factors, these circumstances into account. Similarly, you can't give honor to a rich person, which would mean if there's a wealthy person or a great person, someone who's very well respected, and really, the judgment should come out against that person. But you feel like, you know, it'll be embarrassing. It will be a little bit of a lack of kavod. Here, I'm supposed to give this person kavod. This person is an upstanding and he's a leader of the community and someone who we all look up to. How can I rule against that person? So what I'll do is I'll rule in favor of this leader. And then afterwards, I'll go over to him privately and I'll tell him, you know, really, I just did that for you to save face, but really you do owe him the money. You really need to pay him. You know, that something like that. Taking it, like, I'll just try to do it under the carpet, so it won't be public. So, because I know he'll listen to me, I know he'll believe me if I tell him that really he owes the money, but I don't want to diminish his honor in the eyes of the people, so in court I'll rule in his favor, and then afterwards I'll go over to him privately and tell him, you got to give him the money. Can't do that either. Can't do that. You have to rule honestly, irrespective of what is going to happen in terms of people's the popularity of the person, what's going to be public opinion. Yeah.
But on the other hand, the other side of the coin is if he does that, he causes tremendous anguish to the poor person.
If what?
If he favors the person who is a...
Let's say it's not a poor person. It's two people having a, you know, it's two regular people, but one of them is a well-respected member of the community. So You can't show favoritism. You have to judge, even if you feel like you can justify it. You can figure out later how to make things right. Doesn't make a difference. You have to judge properly, again, irrespective of what the circumstances are. Today, one of the visitors from South Florida is Rabbi David Schoen, who is the Rosh Kollel of the Choshen Mishpat Kollel in Miami Beach, and he also has a base stand in Miami Beach, and he gave a shir in the kollel today. So he was trying to show the importance of going to base stand and showing how often the way that the halacha rules is not what you would have thought intuitively, and people logically believe one way or another way, but they don't really know the halacha of monetary law, and therefore one does need to go to a base stand. So in one circumstance that he described, one of the people in the shir raised their hand and said, but how will that look? If you rule that way, then it's going to get in the papers and it's going to come out, you know, that doesn't look very nice. So he responded, "Hey, that's what the Torah says. Like, we're not based on what they're going to write in the papers. We got to say the halacha. If the halacha is X, then you got to paskin X. You can't say Y because you're afraid of what they're going to write about in the papers. You got to do the halacha." So that's what the pasuk is saying over here. Now the pasuk ends off, "But tzedek tishpot amisecha, you shall judge your friend righteously." So the simple meaning of that is, if you're a judge, judge according to the law. Don't alter the judgment. However, from here we also derive the rule, which is in Pirkei Avos, of have you done eskala adam lekaf skos? Judge people favorably. That's also derived from this pasuk, "Betzedek tishpot amisecha." Judge your friend with righteousness, which means presume that he is righteous. That's not a judge. A judge can't do that. A judging court cannot presume that he is righteous. When we say innocent until proven guilty, that's a beautiful thought until you have two people fighting with each other. One of them is going to lose and one of them is going to win. You can't say they're both innocent. Someone owes some, either Reuven owes Shimon money, or Reuven doesn't owe Shimon money. So you can't walk in presuming innocence. You got to walk in presuming nothing. And you got to judge according to the law. That's what you have to say. So there you would read the pasuk, "Betzedek tishpat amisecha," judge your friend with righteousness, which means you should be righteous when you judge your friend. Judge according to the proper halacha. But the other way to read it is, "Betzedek tishpat amisecha," judge your friend and presume that he is righteous. That is not a court case. That is just regular living. When you see something your friend is doing and you're not sure is it correct or incorrect, you should presume that he is doing something that is correct. You should judge it favorably. This is not an easy thing to do when we are... Well, it's not an easy thing to do at all. And it's certainly not an easy thing to do when we are the ones who might be hurt by what is going on. And it's very, very difficult for a person to... This is something which we struggle with a lot, which is to judge favorably. The halacha is that a regular Jew who does something it's a 50-50 chance. 50% that what he's doing is appropriate, 50% is what he's doing is inappropriate. So the pasuk says you have to judge him favorably. You have to presume that what he's doing is appropriate. So an example of that would be that you see your friend, and they're walking around with a Dunkin' Donuts cup of coffee. So that means they went into Dunkin' Donuts to get a cup of coffee. Well, Dunkin' Donuts is not kosher in Atlanta. So do you presume that they also got non-kosher food from the Dunkin' Donuts? You presume they only got the coffee. So you have to presume they only got the coffee. Because... Betzedek tishpot amisecha, you have to judge your friend favorably. You cannot presume that they did something wrong since the circumstances don't lean towards being wrong. If the circumstances would seem a majority would be more likely that they did something wrong than did something right, so that would be the person comes out of the Dunkin' Donuts and they're holding a cup of coffee, the Dunkin' Donuts cup of coffee, and they're also holding, not a donut, let's say that's really, they're holding a container of some sort of food container, or a bag or something like that. So now that really looks bad.
It's creamer and sugar for their coffee.
Let's say it's an empty, wrapper, and it's got
jelly on it.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Sticking
right?
It.
That looks really bad. That looks really bad. So if the person is a regular person, then you are not obligated to judge a person favorably in that case. Because since the details would seem very likely to indicate something wrong, you're not required to judge favorably, although it is a mitzvah to judge favorably, even there. But you're not required to. In that case, you don't get an avera if you presume that they got a donut and they ate the donut. But it is still it's laudable if you're able to judge favorably in that case. But if that person is someone who's known to be a great tzaddik or known to be a great Talmud Chacham, a great Torah scholar, then you are required to judge favorably even in that case. Even though the circumstances seem very bad, you're still required to judge favorably. And we have examples in the Gemara of cases where people did things that looked very bad, and the Gemara discusses judging favorably even when the situation looked very, very bad. The Gemara discusses a particular situation where one of the great sages of the Gemara was walking with his students and came to the house of a non-Jewish matron, a woman of stature, and he made his students wait outside and went in and closed the door and was alone with her for an extended period of time, and then came out and went to the mikvah.
Oh, gosh.
So
he didn't say anything.
And so he said to the students, "What were you thinking when I did all these things?" And they explained how they judged him favorably. They judged that he had a serious government issue to discuss with her that would have affected a lot of people and could not be done publicly. That's why he had to close the door. They presumed that when she was talking to him, she accidentally spit onto his clothing, which would make him tameh, because he kept a very high level of tumah and tara, and that's why he had to go to the mikvah. There were a few other circumstances over there, and he told them, "You are all 100% correct. That is exactly what happened. You judge me favorably. Hashem should judge you favorably." But that's how far a person has to go. When you're dealing with a great sage or a great tzaddik, someone known for their righteousness, then you have to presume that they are doing the right thing, even when the circumstances don't appear that way. Now, if you actually see them do an avera, which could happen, you see the person take the pork and put it in their mouths. So you can't judge favorably over there. I mean, maybe the person is diabetic or something, but if you know they're not diabetic, whatever it is, they did the wrong thing. So the Gemara says, Imra Isa, Tamar Chacham Sha'avra Avera Balaila, if you saw with your own two eyes, you saw Tamar Chacham do an Avera at night, you saw a Torah scholar do an Avera at night, Al Tahara Acharav Bayom, do not have any thought about it during the day. Shebevadai Asa Tshuva, because he certainly did Tshuva. By the time the morning comes around, you have to presume that he has remorse for what he did, and he has already done Tshuva for his Avera. So there, you don't have to judge favorably that he didn't do the Avera. You saw him do the Avera. You don't have to doubt your own eyes. But you do have to presume that he has since done tshuva. Those of you who attend the Navi class on Wednesday know, we talked about this several years ago already, but the greatest lesson of this, we learn, it's coming up, in the Haftarah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah. The Haftarah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we know that's the story of Chana and the birth of Shmuel and her dealings with Eli. So in that story of Chana and Eli, Chana exemplifies this midah, this ability to not to judge favorably, but to presume that tshuva was done. Not to diminish in her mind the greatness of the tzaddik of the Talmud Chacham, even though she saw him do something wrong. And that is that when Chana is davening fervently for Shmuel, and her lips are moving, but nothing can be heard, and Eli presumes that she is a shikora, that she is drunk, and he accuses her of being drunk, and she responds, "Lo Adoni, no, my master," which Chazal say means, she responds, "You are not a master in this matter. You don't have it right. You are wrong. I am not drunk." And she explains that she's bitter over the fact that she doesn't have a child. And Eli gives her a bracha. And he says to her, Hashem should give you what you're asking for. So the pasuk then says, she left and she was no longer upset. Because since Eli had given her a bracha that she would have a child, she accepted that. She said, Eli said it, so she was no longer upset. So the unbelievable thing is, Chana had just caught Eli making an error. In fact, accusing her falsely. How do you feel when someone accuses you falsely? When someone presumes that you're doing something wrong when what you were doing is perfectly right. That's a very difficult thing. You feel like you feel very self-righteous and very indignant. And who are you to say that to me? Well, all right. And she tells him, you're wrong. You're not right. She says it in a respectful way, but she says, you're wrong. And the very next line, he gives her a bracha and she says, okay, good. I'm going to have a child. Eli said it. I'm going to have a child. Eli's mistake did not diminish him in her eyes at all. She retained her sense that he is the Gadol Hador. He's the great one of the generation. That's the type of emunah, of trust in our great ones that the Torah demands of us. You see someone doing something wrong, a great person doing something wrong, you have to presume that they did tshuva, and you can't allow your opinion of the person to be diminished. It's a very, very hard thing to do. Especially when you feel they wronged you. And sometimes they do. People make mistakes. It happens. It happens. People make mistakes. So here you have this Talmud Chacham or this Tzadik or Tzadekis, and you feel they did something wrong to you personally, so that you don't have to whitewash that. They did something wrong. But you have to presume that they feel bad about it, and you can't allow your opinion of them to be diminished just because they did the one thing. Now, a person can be a great person and then end up bad. That can happen. A person can be great and then they fall. So if that happens, obviously they're no longer the great person they were anymore. But just because they did one thing wrong, even if it was to you, that does not change their status. It's a hard thing to do. Very, very hard thing to do for a human being to do. Yeah?
I do have a question in that instance. Was Eli supposed to have nevuah?
Well, he had an element of nevuah because he had the Urim v'Tumim
right. That
told him. But he misread it. Yes.
Okay.
Which meant that his Ruach HaKodesh, which I don't know if that's exactly Nevuah, but some sort of divine inspiration, was not with him, which is what she was saying to him. Lo Adoni, you are not a master in this matter, you don't have it here.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so that is B'tzedek Tishpot Amisecha, we have to judge our fellow favorably. Tezayin 16, Lo Selech Rachil Be'amecha, here's a big one, do not go as a talebearer in your nation. Lo Samor Adam Reyecha, do not stand on the blood of your friend, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Lo Selech Rachil Be'amecha, everybody is familiar with the severity of the rules of Lashon Hara and Rechilus. And here we have, do not go as a talebearer. The Chavetz Chaim, in his work on Lashon Hara, explains the difference between Lashon Hara and Rechilus. What is the difference between those two things? Lashon Hara is saying something that is negative about somebody else, or a little bit more sharply, a little more accurately, it is when I tell you something with intention to make you think less of a third party. That is Lashon Hara. So I tell you something, and those words are to get you to think less, or they make you think less, of another person. That's Lashon Hara. Rechilus is, I tell you something that a third person said or did to you that you were unaware of. Which means I'm causing strife between you and the other person. That's Rechilus. Rechilus is worse than Lashon Hara because it causes strife between two people, or I don't know if it's worse, it's at least as bad as Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is, I make you think less of another person. Rechilus is, I make you fight with another person. That's the difference between Lashon Hara and Rechilus. So Rechilus, I say to you, do you know what so-and-so said about you? So-and-so spoke Lashon Hara about you. So if I tell you that they spoke Lashon Hara about you, that's Rechilus. Because I'm causing you to have a fight or anger towards that person.
Or even hateful.
Or hate for that person. Right. Yeah. That is Rechilus. Where I tell you, do you know what the person did behind your back? That's Rechilus. If I tell you, that person, you know that person, they're really, X, Y, or Z. They're really cruel. They're really not nice. Or that's Lashon Hara. I'm telling you something negative about somebody else. But when I tell you something about that someone else did to you in order to get you to be upset with that person, that is Rechilus. The word Rechil means a talebearer, which really could fit either one. It could fit Lashon Hara or what we call Rechilus. But in the parlance, at least of the Mishnah, of the Gemara, these are the way you break it down, of Lashon Hara and Rechilus. In both cases, Lashon Hara and Rechilus are talking about information that is true, not a made-up story. I'm telling you something that's 100% true. I was there, and I heard it with my own ears, I saw it with my own eyes. So-and-so did or said something about you. That's 100% true, but it is still usur, absolutely prohibited for me to tell you about that, because that causes strife between the two of you. Yeah?
If somebody wanted to harm that person physically,
for yes.
example, that must be an exception, no?
Yes, that is an exception, not only physically. There, I'm trying to prevent you from harm, to protect you from harm. That's different. So if I know that so-and-so wants to do something to you, physical or otherwise, doesn't have to be physical, or someone did something to you that if you know about it, you can correct the problem.
Right.
So then I'm helping you. I'm there to protect you. That's different. Now, there are details for what needs to be in place in order for me to repeat the information, but it is the most important distinction between what is prohibited to say and what is permitted to say. Is that, am I doing it to help you, or am I doing it just to inform you? If I'm doing it just to inform you, it's prohibited. If I'm doing it to help you, then it might be permitted. It just depends whether other circumstances are true. I have to have a reasonable chance that it will be helpful to you, not just a wild guess, but that there is a decent reason to believe that it will be helpful to you. It has to be that I know the information firsthand. It has to be that there was no other way for me to prevent you from harm. That is, if I could have prevented the harm from getting to you by not telling you, but in another manner, I would have to use a different means. But typically, if I'm doing it to protect you, and that is my sole intention, typically that will be permitted, or at least likely be permitted. Yes. Okay. We also have in this pasuk, do not stand on the blood of your brother. That is a fancy way of saying that you should make sure to not stand by as your brother's blood is in danger. Save the person's life. You're walking by the river, dramatic case, and you see a fellow Jew is, God forbid, drowning, and you are a good swimmer, and you are able, you are trained, you know how to save a person in the water, you are required to jump in the water and save the person. It's not a nice thing to do. It is a requirement, it is a commandment. You must jump in the water. Now, you're not allowed to jump in the water if you're not a good swimmer, and there's God forbid a chance that the one who's trying to save the person will themselves drown, then it is prohibited. You're not allowed to take a chance like that. But if you're not in any danger, then you are required, obligated to jump in and save the person. Which means someone is in need of a kidney transplant, and a fellow Jew is a good match. So it is one can make a very strong argument that they are required to go through the surgery to save the other person. Now, that's not 100% because there may be some risks involved in the surgery to save the other person, but it's very difficult to justify it if the person knows that they are in fact a match. It only applies to a fellow Jew. It does not apply to a non-Jew, meaning you're not required to do it for a non-Jew, and therefore, when you don't know who the recipient is, so then it's not, you can assume the recipient is not Jewish. Why should you assume they're Jewish? However, if you know, then there is a requirement to, at least it's likely a requirement. Once heard a shiur on this discussion from Rabbi Dr. Bleich from Yeshiva University. And he pointed out that there are those who want to say that they're not required to go through the surgery of a kidney transplant, because since anesthesia has its risks, they could hurt a person, so therefore the donor is not required to go through a surgery that has general anesthesia, because then they're at risk. It's like jumping in the water to save the other person when the one jumping in the water isn't sure that they're able to do, and they may drown themselves. So here, to put the person under general anesthesia, so then perhaps that is too much of a risk, and therefore one is not required to donate the kidney. But he responded to that.
So go under it.
Right. Who told you to use anesthesia? Endure the pain. Oh, you want anesthesia because you don't want to be in pain. That's a different discussion. But that has nothing to do with saving the other person. Go through the pain. You're only using anesthesia for yourself, not for the other person. So therefore, he didn't feel that was a valid excuse for not being a donor. That logic is sound to me as well. But this applies to those are more dramatic cases. A person is drowning. The person needs a kidney donation. Those are dramatic cases where the person is clearly going to die, and the fellow Jew has a very reasonable chance of saving the person. You're required to try. It becomes a little less direct or a little more unclear. First of all, what if there are several Jews who could do the same thing? As we're all walking by the water, we're all good swimmers, and there that person is drowning. Why am I required to jump in the water? You could also jump in the water. So that gets into a little bit of a... Now, that case is, you say to yourself, well, that's a little silly. But the way it comes up is, let's say there's a situation where it's a question of ransoming someone who was kidnapped, which costs money. And it's a question of who's going to donate the money. Well, the money is collected from a lot of people. So if a lot of different people could donate the money, so am I required to, and other people could donate the money? Right? It gets a little more, the more impersonal it gets, and the more distant it gets, the more people rationalize that it's not my problem. It's not my problem. There are other people who could do it. It's not my problem. You know? And it's a faceless, nameless victim. You know, when I'm walking by the water, they're there, they're screaming for help. It's a lot harder to ignore that,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it does happen that a person becomes dulled to these things because of the fact that it's distant or nameless or faceless. But we have to be cognizant of that fact. It does say in the Gemara that a chassid shota. Chassid means a very, very pious person. That when the Gemara uses the word chassid, the Gemara is not referring to the movement of chassidus. That's because the Gemara's use of the word chassid predates the movement of chassidus by 1,000 years. So when the Gemara uses the or more, when the Gemara uses the term chassid, it is referring to a very pious person. Chassid is a higher level than tzaddik. So the Gemara says that a chassid shota, a chassid who is foolish, a foolish chassid, is a person, a man, who is a pious person, who's walking by the river, and there's a woman in the water who is drowning, and he's able to save her, and he says, I don't want to jump in because she's not dressed properly. So that would be a chassid shota, the Gemara says. That would be a chassid. He is a pious person. He's motivated by a pious reason, but he's a fool because he is giving too much weight to one mitzvah and ignoring a more important mitzvah, which is to save her life. So that is the example in the Gemara. Lo samor adam reyecha, do not stand on the blood of your friend. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Lo sisna es achicha b'ulvavecha, do not hate your brother in your heart. Tochiach es amisecha, you shall surely criticize or give admonishment to your friend. Velo sisa alav chet, do not carry upon him a sin. Do not hate your brother in your heart. We're going to have later, don't bear a grudge. Don't bear a grudge means, as we'll see later, it's going to be the next pasuk. That's a little different than this. That's going to be actually with a monetary, with an action. Lo sisa zachicha b'ulvavecha, do not hate your brother in your heart, means inwardly. You're not going to do anything about it. You just inside, you despise or detest the person. You're not allowed to hate. Hate is a very strong word. You're not allowed to hate your fellow Jew when there is no, when we say baseless hatred, sinas chinam, to hate one's fellow Jew, one is not allowed to do that. One is only allowed to hate someone who is a bona fide Rasha. There are people who are bona fide Rishayim. There are evil people. We talked about this last week, I believe. There are bona fide Rishayim in the world, but they are few and far between. The vast majority of people are not Rishayim. They may be misguided. They may have their own faults. They may not treat you nicely. But that doesn't make them a Rasha. It doesn't make them evil. And you're not allowed to hate them. You're not allowed to hate a person, a fellow Jew, who is not a bona fide Rasha. Even though it's internal. It's in your heart. Still not allowed to do that. The Gemara tells us that when Yosef's brothers, that when they hated him, it says, "V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom." They could not speak to him in peace. So the Gemara says, from that line we learn the greatness of the brothers, even though they were in the middle of a machlokas, which is very bad. But you do see from that line that the brothers were not echad belev ve'echad bepeh. They weren't acting one way, but thinking something else. They weren't on their sleeve. They didn't pretend to love him when they really hated him. They were honest and open about it, and they were not able to speak to him in peace because they were not trying to cover anything up. One is not allowed to hate their fellow Jew in their heart. Then the Pasuk says, Hocheach tochiach es am yisecha, you shall admonish or give criticism to your friend. V'los yisar lav chet, do not carry upon him a sin. It is a mitzvah to admonish our fellow Jew. Why do we admonish our fellow Jew? Because we don't want them to do a sin. Why don't we want them to do a sin? Because we love them. Because we love each other. And we do not want our fellow Jew to end up being punished for a sin. If we would see our fellow Jew crying out in pain, would we not feel for them? Would we not, our hearts wouldn't go out to them? We see a fellow Jew who is enduring physical pain, emotional pain, whatever it is, and we feel for them. Our hearts go out to them, and we want to do something for them. We want to help them. So by the same token, if I see a fellow Jew who is about to get hurt, I want to prevent that from happening. If this heavy brick falls on their foot and will break their bone, so if it happened already and they're sitting there writhing in pain holding their foot, we feel for them. So if the brick is about to fall on their foot, I want to grab that brick before it falls on their foot. God forbid they shouldn't get hurt. If they're about to take a brick and throw it down on their foot, I'd like to stop that. I don't want to hurt them. I don't want them to get hurt. I don't want them to be in pain. So if I see a fellow Jew who's about to commit a sin, that means they're going to hurt themselves. That means they're going to get hurt, unless they do tshuva. They're going to get hurt. They're damaging themselves spiritually. If we love our fellow Jew, we do not want that to happen. And therefore, we admonish our fellow Jew that they're not allowed to behave in a certain manner. But it has to come from love. If it doesn't come from love, the Torah doesn't require that it come from love. You can admonish your fellow Jew even if it doesn't come from love. The problem is that if you admonish your fellow Jew in a way that does not come from love, they will see right through it. And they will not accept the criticism. Very, very few people have the strength to accept criticism when it is not coming from intense love. Even when it is coming from intense love, it's hard to accept criticism. But there at least is a chance. But we are very, very fragile in our day and age. Much more fragile than people have been in the history of the world. We're very fragile. It's very, very hard for us emotionally to accept criticism. So we avoid it. We dig in our heels. We lash out. We're not willing to hear criticism.
Maybe not a safe space.
Maybe not a safe space. But the truth is, if you see me doing something which is destructive, then you're really helping me if I'll listen to you. So the trick is to admonish me in a way that I will listen. So when it comes from love, then there is at least the chance that I will listen. And that's the requirement here of Hocheach Tochiach Es Am Yisrecha. It is a mitzvah to become a good admonisher, if there is such a word. It's a mitzvah to do it right. To be a good criticizer. When I say good, I mean an effective criticizer in a way that the other person will listen, which is extremely difficult to do. Extremely difficult to do. But it's a mitzvah for one to practice and learn to do it right, which is, as I said, extremely hard to do it. But it is a mitzvah, and you're helping another person. You're really helping another person. It's a big, big mitzvah to do it. And the Torah does require it from us in a situation where we're able to do it. Now, sometimes you're in a natural position of authority. That would be a parent for a child, a teacher for a student, a leader for the community. And there's a requirement to admonish. And because when a person is in a position of authority, they are more likely to be listened to. And so it is very, very important that people recognize those areas in which they will be listened to or might be listened to. The Gemara tells us that in the Psukim in Yechezkel, which again, those of you who attend the Navi class, that goes back now about 11 years. But when we learned Yechezkel, the Psukim say that Hashem told the Malach to go through the city and put a sign on the forehead of each of the people in the city. Those who were Rishayim, those who were evil, got one type of sign, which would signify that they will be destroyed, and the Tzaddikim got a different type of sign that signified they will be saved. So the Gemara tells us that the prosecuting angel said to Hashem, why should they be saved, the Tzaddikim, the righteous people? But they didn't admonish the evil people. So Hashem said back to the prosecuting angel, but I can tell you, I know everything, I can tell you that the evil people were not going to listen. No matter what the Tzaddikim would have said, they would not have listened. And the prosecuting angel said back to Hashem, you knew that, but they didn't know that. And Hashem said, you're right. And therefore the Tzaddikim were killed along with the Rishayim, because they didn't admonish the Rishayim. And even though they would not have been listened to, but they didn't know that. And the Torah requires us to admonish. But again, we're talking about admonishing in a way that has a chance of being effective. If you know you're not going to be listened to, then it's worse to do it, because sometimes a person gets so angry that you dare to wag your finger at them, so they'll do it more, or they'll strike out at you, whatever it is, they'll do something. But you're required to try. The truth is, if you're only worried about the person hitting you, I don't mean like seriously damaging you, but if you're only worried that the person is going to hurl an insult at you, or you know just push you away, that's not a good enough excuse not to admonish. You still have to admonish. But if you're worried that the person, for example, sometimes this happens, that the person will because of what you're saying, will then go and do more averos in spite. Because how dare you? Who are you to talk to me? That kind of thing. Then it is better to keep your mouth shut and not to say anything. Similarly, sometimes, and this is really our main reason for not criticizing, is that we believe that the long-term benefit of maintaining our relationship will yield greater results than to risk our relationship to admonish the person. And that is often true, especially in family situations. That's often true. There's a family member who unfortunately is not keeping the Torah properly, and we have a good relationship. As long as that person has a good relationship with people who do keep the Torah, that person will behave in a better way. Because the fact of the matter is, people like to live up to their relationships. They rise to the occasion for their relationships. But if I am overly critical of that person, and the person therefore severs their relationship with me, then it is likely that they will not rise to the occasion. They will actually do worse things than they've been doing until now. So that is a valid reason to avoid admonishing, or at least to admonish in a very, very gentle way. However, this is where it gets murky, and this is where we tend to make a mistake in this area, is that sometimes I don't want to admonish the person because I don't want the person not to like me. I want to be liked. Everybody wants to be liked. I want everybody to think highly of me. I want everybody to like me. So if I admonish the person, they're not going to like me. They're going to be upset at me. I don't want a person to be upset at me. So I don't want to admonish them. So that's selfish. When you strip it all away, that's selfish. Because I'm thinking of myself instead of that person. The person might listen. There's a chance they may listen. So if they might listen, then how could I allow them to hurt themselves? Why? Because I'm afraid they're not going to like me? So I'm more worried about my own skin than I am about that person. And if they don't like me, what's that? What does that mean? So they don't like me. I don't lose my Olam Haba for that, because they don't like me. But this person might lose their Olam Haba. So when it's just a question of I'm risking the fact that the person may be upset with me, that's not a good enough reason to avoid admonishing. But as I said before, very often, especially in family situations, what I'm risking is that the person will sever ties with me and then they'll become a worse person. That right now the only thing holding them close to Yiddishkeit is our relationship. And then one does need to protect that relationship. Be that as it may, today, any type of admonishment has to be done extremely gently. Very, very gently, because we are so fragile. Very, very, very gently. Nevertheless, one should try their best to get good at it, to do it properly. The pasuk ends off, "Losisa lavchet," do not carry on that person a sin. Rashi explains this means don't embarrass them. That when you criticize, don't embarrass the person. Do it privately. Do it without embarrassing them. We just attended a few weeks ago the Shabbos Sheva Brachos for our son, and it wasn't a catered affair, but it took place in a shul, and the food had been prepared by the women who had prepared it, but there were some waiters who were hired to serve the meal and clean up the meal, etc. So the waiter had the waiters were not Jewish, and the lead waiter was towards the end of the meal was cleaning off the table, and one of the people who was in charge of the Sheva Brachos said to the waiter, I was at the table when this happened, said to the waiter, there was many tables in the room, said to the waiter, I asked before that this not be done, because I want everybody, the people right now, the people are going to sit around and schmooze for a little while. We don't want the cleaning up to be done right now. So the waiter got very insulted. And the waiter kind of like stormed towards the door and motioned for the person who had said something to come with him. And they went out, and then the waiter just, yelled at the person. And the waiter said, "You embarrassed me to say that in front of everybody. You criticized me in front of everybody." Now, I was sitting at the table. I mean, it wasn't criticism. It was instructions. Maybe it wasn't worded in a very soft way. Maybe it wasn't worded, with all the please and thanks and all that. But it wasn't criticism. It was simply stating what the original agreement had been with the waiter. But the waiter took it very, very critically and was very upset. Very, very upset by that. Right. People are very fragile. People are very fragile. And because it was in front of other people, the waiter was embarrassed. The waiter doesn't know us. The waiter's never going to see us again. This is a waiter in a city where none of us lived and, not Jewish. What does he care?
Yeah, your paths aren't going to cross again.
What's that?
Your paths are not going to cross.
Right. What does he care? So people are like, but people care. People get embarrassed. People, it matters to people. So a person has to be very, very careful when they admonish to do it in a way that is not going to embarrass the person. And therefore, one of the biggest mistakes we make when we criticize, we're trying to do it right. We think about it, we're going to do it softly and gently, we're going to do it right. But one of the biggest mistakes we make is we do not pick the correct time. That is one of the biggest mistakes. So we feel like we've got to do it now, because now is when it's happening. And very often, now is not the time. The time is later. Time is to make a note and to catch the person later. Later could be a week from now. Later could be 2 weeks from now. Or at least tomorrow. But it doesn't have to be this minute. The only exception to this is when the person has not yet committed the sin and you can stop them. And they'll listen. So there, the person is about to commit the sin and you can stop them. Then one does it, even though there may be some embarrassment there. Because it's important that ultimately to prevent this sin. I remember once I was at a. Remember once we were. I believe I was still a bacher. I think I was still unmarried. We were a friend of mine and I were we were at a couple's house for a meal on Friday night, and after the meal, they were showing us some pictures. We were standing in the living room. And they were showing us some pictures, and there was a lamp there, and the lamp was off. And the wife of the house, that we were opening the pictures, it was hard to see, she started to reach, she had forgotten, she started to reach for the lamp. And her husband said, like that. So she went, like that, and she walked out of the room. Because she was embarrassed, it was in front of everybody. But the fact of the matter is, Right? This way she didn't turn on the light. The truth is, had she turned on the light, she probably would have realized and been more embarrassed. Right? So, you know, there you kind of lost either way. So that was when you can stop a person. The halacha is, for example, you're not allowed to speak words of Torah in a bathroom or in a bathhouse. You're not allowed to speak words of Torah. And that's true no matter what. However, if a person is about to do an Aveira and you can stop them by saying a word of Torah, then you are required to say that word of Torah. So, for example, a person is in that room where you're not supposed to say any words of Torah, and they're about to, let's say it's Shabbos, and they're about to turn on the hot water. And the hot water is not, it's prohibited to turn on the hot water on Shabbos. So then, if you see that, you're allowed to say, it's Shabbos today, you can't turn on the hot water on Shabbos. And you're telling them words of Torah. But because you're preventing the Aveira, that would be permitted. But once they did it, you can't say it in the bathroom. You have to wait till you're out of the bathroom to tell them, by the way, you're not supposed to do that on Shabbos. And then, of course, you want to pick the right time, do it very gently. But if you could stop them at the moment from doing it, then you would say it even in those circumstances. One more pasuk. This is a rather famous pasuk. Lo sikom velo sitoras b'nei amecha. Do not take revenge, and do not bear a grudge against the people of your nation. Ve'ahavta l're'acha kamocha, and love your friend like yourself. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. The Gemara explains what's the difference between nikama, which is to take revenge, and nitira, to bear a grudge. So we already had don't hate your brother in your heart. This bear a grudge means something a little bit different. So the famous example is that I go to your house on Sunday, and I ask you, can I borrow a pair of scissors? And you tell me, no, I'm sorry, I don't lend out my scissors. And then on Monday you come to my house and you ask me, can I borrow your tape measure? So if I say to you, no, you didn't give me scissors yesterday, I'm not giving you the tape measure today. That is nekama, that's revenge. That is prohibited. And if I say to you, you can have my tape measure because I'm not like you. You didn't lend me the scissors, but I'll lend you the tape measure. That's lo sitar, that's bearing a grudge. I'm doing it, but I'm doing it and I'm rubbing in it. And I'm telling you, yeah, because I'm a better person than you are. You're right. I'm clearly angry at you and I'm rubbing it in your face by giving it to you. So those are two things that are prohibited for us to do to our fellow Jew. We're not allowed to take revenge. We're not allowed to bear a grudge, which means that if I come to your house on Sunday and I ask you to borrow a pair of scissors and you say, I'm sorry, I don't lend out my scissors, and I'm annoyed, and then the next day you come to me and you say, can I borrow your tape measure? I am required to lend you the tape measure and keep my mouth shut. That's the halacha. That's what the Torah is telling us. Now, often, especially we hear this from the children, when you tell them you're not allowed to take revenge, but what is that? They did something to me. So, he hit me first. So who's worse, him or me? So not taking revenge doesn't mean that the person who did the hitting in the first place is a good person. They still did something wrong. When you didn't lend me the pair of scissors, that was bad, that was wrong, unless you had a good reason. But if you didn't have a good reason, that's bad and that's wrong. It doesn't make you a good person, the fact that you didn't lend me the pair of scissors, but that doesn't justify my retaliation. That's the point. So we have to be careful with nekama and with netira. This does happen. In the example of borrowing, lending, I don't think it happens too frequently in our societies, but it does happen in other ways where, you know, I feel like I asked you, you didn't do anything, I asked for your goodwill or your whatever it is, and you didn't do it. So why should I, we do feel that way, and there's a certain sense of keeping score that we do have, and a person has to be careful with that. And then finally, the very famous line, "V'ahavta l'recha kamocha," love your friend like yourself. So we know that the Gemara says, "Zek klal gadol b'Torah." This is a great general principle in the Torah of "V'ahavta l'recha kamocha," love your friend as you love yourself. We know that Hillel used a variation of this. It's not really this, but a slight variation of this in the famous case where the ger came and said, teach me the Torah while standing on one foot. And he said, what you despise, what you don't like, don't do to your friend, which is a little bit different because it's spoken in the negative. This is in the positive. Love your friend like yourself. And Hillel said, that's the entire Torah, and the rest you should go study. The rest explains that. So you go study. So this is a major principle of the Torah of Haftarah Recha Kamocha. Love your friend like yourself. Your friend means your fellow Jew. Love your fellow Jew like yourself. The Torah, many, many mitzvahs in the Torah are built on this principle that you want to treat others the way you would want to be treated. And that means, even when another person didn't treat me like I want to be treated, I should still treat you the way I would want to be treated. That's the hard part. See, it's easy to do it. When you treated me nicely, it's easy for me to treat you nicely. But when you didn't treat me nicely, that I should treat you the way I would have wanted you to treat me, that's much harder to do. But that is the mitzvah. Tell the Reich HaKamach, love your friend like yourself. Mitzvah Hashem, next week, we should... Yeah.
You know, I like the comments that I've heard over the years that it's important to love yourself.
Oh, very good, very good. Yes, that's true. That's true. You should love yourself. That is true. That is true. Very good. Next week, Mirza Hashem, we should be able to have Shir. I'm planning on it. That will be the last one until after Sukkot, because the following week is going to be Tzom Gedalia as a fast day. So we would not have Shir that day. So next week, Mirza Hashem, on the 17th, will be the final one until after Sukkot.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.